Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I am Ryan McPherson. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Today is another episode of Caring for Aging Parents Radio. This is the show that discusses topics relating to the aging, issues around older adults, and such as caregiving, relationships, healthcare, and more. And we're going to be talking to a couple subject matter experts in that field here today. But as a reminder, right at the beginning, make sure you are connected with us on social media at Business Radio X. Leave your thoughts and comments there on Twitter. And you can also check out our Facebook page, Business Radio X, and interact with us there. At this time, let me introduce my co-host today, Jenny Hewer. How are you, Jenny?
I'm doing good, Ryan. How are you doing?
Excellent. This is episode two of Caring for Aging
episode
Parents.
Episode two. Very, very excited.
It is. And so you've brought this show to the Business Radio X network, and we've gotten great feedback from this so much already. And we know this is a subject that needs to be talked about more often. So we're glad to have you here bringing this to our audience today.
Thank you so much.
All right. And we have two guests joining us in the studio. Let's introduce first Chris Brannon. He is a elder law practitioner. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Tell us just a little bit briefly about yourself and your practice.
Okay. Well, I'm an elder law attorney. We have an office in Dunwoody and an office in Decatur. I always have to explain to people what an elder law attorney does. And basically, we help people with the legal and financial considerations associated with long-term care. The legal considerations typically are, you know, helping people with their basic planning documents, making sure people have their wills, powers of attorneys, advance directives in place. Also reviewing, you know, when we're working with older clients, we're also going to review all their assets and review all their bank accounts, beneficiary designations, anything you can think of that factors into their estate plan, and make sure that stuff is solid for our clients.
Yeah, and there's so many layers to that for sure. And you're helping families, you're helping people. And so we look forward to hearing more about that from you here in just a moment. But let's also introduce Amanda James. She is with the Division of Aging Services here for the great state of Georgia. How are you, Amanda?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. So how long have you been in that organization?
I've been with the state for about 5 years now.
And what was your background previous to that?
I actually worked at our area agencies on aging, which we have 12 of those throughout the state. They're sort of the hub for services for people who are older or have a disability. And so I worked at the local level before coming to the state.
So you've always been involved with caring for seniors, it sounds like.
Yes, actually, that's after I graduated college, I went right into it.
So we know your heart's in the right place for sure. So Jenny, here we are and ready to go. So let's get started with some good questions.
Okay. Well, I know, Amanda, you are a forensic specialist.
Yes, I am.
Yes. And what I saw for today's show was there is a connection to me between the financial and legal aspects of elder law, also with the risks associated with certain documents when those are put in place and then those are abused by the individuals who have power in those documents. So there can be abuse that can occur. So I wanted to bring together Chris and Amanda to discuss these topics because I think they're very closely connected. So Chris, tell me about some of the basic documents that people need in place.
Okay. The basic documents that we do for our clients are three basic documents. And these really don't change whether or not our clients are 95 years old and in a nursing home or 25 years old and doing their planning for the first time. And what we have to explain to people all the time, and particularly our older clients who are hesitant to do it, is that, you know, these are planning documents. It is not an admission that you need help, or it is not, you know, turning over the right to make decisions for yourself or your property over to your kids. You do these documents while you're able to, while you're healthy. The three documents, though, are an advance directive for healthcare, which allows you to appoint someone as your agent to make medical decisions or healthcare decisions for you in the event that you can't communicate with your care providers. There are other aspects to the advance directive for healthcare related specifically to care decisions and care choices, probably not relevant to our discussion today. The durable power of attorney or the financial power of attorney is probably the one we're going to spend the most time talking about today. Same concept as the advance directive, but you're appointing someone else who can stand in your shoes and make financial decisions for you or handle financial transactions for you. The last document that we, as part of the three parts of our estate plan, is a will. I think everybody understands what a will is. If you don't, it is how you make sure that your property goes to who you want it to go to after your death. The Advanced Directive for Healthcare and the Durable Power of Attorney are incapacity planning documents. So they are really useful only while you're still living. And the idea is if you're still living and you're not able to communicate with your doctors or go to your bank or do any of those things, that your family members have the paperwork that will enable them to do those things for you. So not to take up too much time on it, but I could probably just talk for an hour just on that. So the Advanced Directive for Healthcare is a statutory form. There's not going to be much abuse or scam or anything related to an Advanced Directive for Healthcare. The Financial Power of Attorney is the big issue because, you know, if you have someone's Financial Power of Attorney, you have a piece of paper or multiple pieces of paper that's signed by that person that enables you to walk into a bank and, you know, access their money or call their life insurance company and change their beneficiary or any number of things that you may need to do. Hopefully you will do those things with the cooperation and with the help of the rest of your family and of the principal, the person that made the documents. But unfortunately, we see dealing with seniors every day. I think everyone here in the room that's participating does. When we deal with this, you know, our older clients, they tend to have significant savings and significant income, oftentimes, especially compared to some of their adult children. And the risk is there for adult children to, you know, even if they're not directly taking from mom or dad or you know, stealing money from them, I think it probably starts more as just having their mom or their dad help them.
Mm-hmm.
When you see when they're caring for their parents and their parents move in with them and then they can't work or they stop working and all of a sudden the lines become blurred between whose income is whose and who's paying for whose mm-hmm. bills. And of course there's more nefarious, you know, abuse than that as well. But so we always tell our clients, I feel like I preach how important it is to have these documents in place. And maybe I don't preach enough that it is equally important that you have someone who's trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not just do this document or do this planning just to do it. You know, you have to have someone who you can trust and rely on. So I think I've been doing elder law specifically for about 5 or 6 years now. And really in the last 3 or 4 years, have begun hearing more and more from people in my community of professionals, in the newspapers, on the radio, of just what, you know, widespread exploitation and kind of financial risk that our seniors are in. So
absolutely. And one thing that I often get questions about when I talk to caregivers, do you have power of attorney in place? I can't tell you how many times I have made that statement or that question to them, because it is so important to have that item in place before the person is not cognitively intact. These are discussions that need to be made into the future. And to piggyback off of what you mentioned, is somebody said something very powerful last week, was that these documents are not licensed to steal.
Yeah, definitely. So we always have to reiterate to our clients and explain to our clients that you have to be capable of making decisions and communicating those decisions to do these documents.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incapacity planning document. You have to have capacity to make the document. You know, and a lot of people in our society in general procrastinate about planning or about getting organized. So people procrastinate about estate planning. I have procrastinated about my own estate planning. It's not an exciting thing to sit down and do. When you procrastinate until something has happened, whether it be a stroke or a heart attack or whatever it may be, then you may very well have waited too long. And if your family member is, you know, at that point in time, not able to communicate with you or able to communicate to an attorney or someone who may help you with these documents, who they want to be in those positions for them, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And you've stumbled into a much messier situation to resolve than you would have had you had this piece of paper that authorized you to do what you needed to do.
And we can't even get into guardianship, because that's a whole other topic unto itself. Very long, costly process that you have shared before today. Amanda, what types of things are you seeing on your spectrum of issues with elder abuse, financial issues?
Well, specifically related to the power of attorney, I think what a lot of people don't realize is it's not an all or nothing. You really can set up a power of attorney for specific things. You don't have to give people complete access to everything. You can also maybe only have it for a specific amount of time. So maybe you have a stroke and then you get better and you can say, okay, now I'm able to make those decisions for myself. What we tend to see is people just do kind of a blanket power of attorney and never revisit it again. Or they don't tell enough people who they appointed so they can make changes to it. We see forged signatures and different things, and that causes problems. We definitely recommend, like you said, picking someone you trust, making sure there are multiple copies so that other members of the family, your bank, all the different agencies you work with know who your power of attorney is. In Georgia, you don't have to file the power of attorney with anyone. So anyone can come around, get you to sign one, and become your new power of attorney. And if other folks in your circle don't realize, hey, something's up, you already had one with your son, why is this new friend now your power of attorney? Then that's not going to be caught as a red flag as easily. So it's definitely important to tell folks, this is what I want, this is what I've done. The other thing that seems to be a huge misconception, and that we do a lot of training for law enforcement and for banks and for others, is just because you have a power of attorney doesn't mean you can do whatever you want with that money. It gives you access to it, but you have a fiduciary responsibility to use that money in the best interest of that person, to do what they would have wanted you to do with it. So if you empty out all the accounts and go on vacations and buy yourself a car and sell their house and stick them in a nursing home and do all of those things, you don't have a legal defense there to say, but I had power of attorney. We have and will continue to prosecute cases like that in Georgia. It does fall under our financial exploitation law. And so it's really important that people realize, just because you have that piece of paper and you can access it, I tend to think about it the way if you had someone cleaning your house and you gave them a key to your home to clean it and they emptied it out and stole everything, they'd still be found guilty of theft even though they had a key. And it's very similar. Like you said, we always say it's not a license to steal. So it's really important that you take the time to pick somebody that you trust, that you go through and you're specific with what you want them to have access to, and that you kind of outline that, that you make sure everybody knows what those thoughts and wishes were, so that if things start getting weird, someone can kind of check them on it and be aware if a new one comes into play, hey, something's wrong, or if the will gets changed or something else. You need to make sure that people in your circle know what your wishes were so that they can raise some questions when things start changing or new people come in the picture.
So let's get down to a foundational item. Let's define for everybody, what is an at-risk adult and what are some of the current Georgia laws? And I know Chris, he wanted to mention something too, so we'll let him share. But let's get to the basics first, and then we'll go into what Chris wanted to share.
Okay. For us at the Division of Aging Services, we use the term at-risk adult just because it's faster than listing out all the different ones. It actually encompasses three different segments of the population that are covered by our abuse laws. So it's older adults that are 65 and older, an adult who's 18 years of age and older that has a mental or physical disability, and a resident in a long-term care facility. So those three populations have specific laws that protect them from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. Primarily, with the subject matter we're talking about today, it's going to be OCGA 16-5-102. And that law covers physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental anguish, as well as exploitation, which is really where we get into the financial piece of it, either taking somebody's money, forcing them to sign documents, using undue influence to trick them into either giving money away or signing documents and different things. It's a very broad law, which we like, because it allows the prosecutors to look at a multitude of different things that people do. Some states have very specific laws that make it harder as our crooks get more creative to use our law. We've got a very general law and it works really well. And we're seeing more and more law enforcement and prosecutors really taking this seriously in their counties and holding people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I was going to mention, just kind of to reiterate what Amanda was saying, a couple things popped in my head about the power of attorney. The first thing is that, you know, you have a fiduciary duty when you serve as someone's agent under a power of attorney. People do not realize that when you're serving as someone's power of attorney, You do not have the authority to do things that they do not want you to do if they can express that to you. And even if they can't, you also have a duty to be aware of what their preferences were and what their kind of goals and ideas were when they were able to think that way. That is one of the biggest issues we run into. We get contacted first often by adult children who are power of attorney for mom or dad. And they just proceed to tell us what their parents need done and where their parents need to move and what kind of who's going to be their agent under the... And we have to explain over and over again that you have a power of attorney. That does not mean you get to make these decisions for your parents against their wishes. We have to talk to them and see what they want. Oftentimes that conversation will have to be in the absence of son or daughter who was initiating the process for us. But people have that power of attorney and they think when they get that paper, now they get to move dad into a nursing home. They get to move into an assisted living facility. We get to sell his car. If he does not want those things and he's able to communicate that to you, then the power of attorney doesn't authorize you to do those things. But that is a widespread misconception.
Absolutely.
And that enables not only the son or the daughter that's trying to do that, it doesn't have to be a son or daughter, but the power of attorney that's trying to do these things, but the people that they're dealing with are also like, okay, your power of attorney, you can do whatever you want to do. So that's a big issue as well. The other thing is just communication when you have a power of attorney. We talk about messy family situations or multiple powers of attorneys. Maybe seniors that have the capacity to make powers of attorneys, but they're not at the top of their, game cognitively. They may sign multiple powers of attorneys to multiple people and the family, or they don't know what's going on. They don't know which one's valid. They don't know who's in charge. So communication is a huge part of your estate plan as well. If you come in to see us and do the three documents we recommend you to do, and then go home and put those in a shoebox in the back of your closet and don't tell anyone, you haven't really accomplished anything. You have to communicate what these documents are to the people that are named in those documents. You have to give them copies of the documents and make sure they can access them if something happens. Because with a power of attorney, it's often going to be something unexpected. What we see in the aftermath often is, multiple people that are involved with this senior who all have paperwork, and they're unaware of the other people that have paperwork, and they're unaware who's supposed to be doing what. So just that, and there are a lot of people, my grandfather included, who wants to sign these documents and then put them away and not tell anyone about them. And if anybody asks him, he wants to say, don't worry about it. I've already done all that stuff. But nobody knows. So it's important. It's equally as important to have those documents drafted and signed to communicate to everyone that is involved what their roles are and where the documents are.
Amanda, can you speak to some of the cases that you have experienced working at the Department of Aging Services? I know we can only speak in generalities due to confidentiality issues, but any case that comes to mind?
Yeah, our unit within the Division of Aging Services, our primary goal is to help support the people that do investigate the cases. So we work a lot with law enforcement, Adult Protective Services, and other agencies. Speaking more general, we keep talking about son and daughter, and that's actually pretty accurate because a lot of the perpetrators we do see are family, oftentimes adult children, with this mindset of it's going to be mine when they die anyway, so why can't I go ahead and take some of it now, which is a really sad reality of what we're seeing. A lot of families. We also see a lot of kind of new friends, someone you met at church or someone you met at book club who take an interest and say, oh, well, let me help you with some things. And it sort of starts snowballing. We're also seeing a really sad trend of individuals claiming that they will help take care of you in more of an assisted living personal care home setting, but they're not licensed. They get everything signed over to them. So they become your representative payee for your Social Security or your benefit checks. They get you to put them on their bank account and all these things. And on the nice end of that, they're just stealing your money. On the bad end of that, they're locking you in a basement and not feeding you. And that's not an exaggeration. Those are actual cases that we see. It's kind of an emerging type of human trafficking. We're doing a lot of conversation at the national level, looking at what that means. They're shuffling people from home to home to avoid catching them. So, I mean, it runs the spectrum on whether I'm just trying to get a little money out of your account to whether I'm trying to control you so no one finds out by abusing you or neglecting you. I don't want to spend the money on you. I want to keep it all. So I'm not going to get you the services. I'm going to take you out of the nursing home because I don't want your money to go there. I'll take care of you at home. And then I'm not. One specific example that really ties to what we're talking about today actually happened in Cobb County. I can't talk about it because it has already gone through trial. It's the case of the Carr family, Jeffrey and Joseph. It's a father and son. They actually met this woman, sort of befriended her. She had early onset dementia. And it's another common misconception that if someone has dementia, they can't sign any forms, which isn't always true. They have moments where they're lucid and they can, and then they have moments where they're not. But it does make things a lot more complicated. And they sort of took advantage of that, got her to sign a power of attorney to them, ended up stealing over $4 million from her, put her in a nursing home, sold her home. Unfortunately, the home was sold to someone in good faith. So even after this all came to light, she was not able to get her home back because the person who had purchased it hadn't done anything wrong. She did get some of that money back. They did all sorts of things. I mean, taking money out of her accounts, doing a number of things, all under the guise of having her power of attorney. And they weren't questioned a lot along the way until it finally kind of caught the eye of someone. But because they had that power of attorney, they were able to just sort of go in, show their piece of paper and say, I have power of attorney, so I'm going to empty this out or I'm going to move these assets. We do have a financial exploitation working group that is working with banks and others to really get them more engaged in looking for, hey, this particular lady didn't spend a lot of money. That's how she got so much savings. She was very thrifty with her money, to start looking at, hey, all this money is now coming out and this doesn't match the spending patterns that we're used to, and to make sure that they know that they're mandated reporters to report those issues so that those things can get caught sooner. I mean, even though you have a power of attorney, when huge amounts are coming out, that's the kind of thing that you want to question and see how come so many things are being emptied out. So, you know, this is a case of $4 million. We see a lot of cases that are smaller, but just as devastating. You know, if you think about an older adult, if you take all their savings, it's not like they can just go back to work and make that up. So the devastation of knowing that all of your savings are gone, trying to figure out how you're going to continue to pay for things. We see a lot of people have a lot of health effects, even though the crime was a financial one, because of the stress mm-hmm. that's involved. A lot of times because of feeling betrayed by someone that they trusted. And unfortunately, with any type of abuse, including financial exploitation, studies have found that people die much faster when they've been a victim of these crimes, just because of the stress and the different sort of concerns that they have about how they're going to recover from that.
And you're really speaking to the trust that people have from that generation. And
absolutely,
they value the opinion of somebody that's an authority. And Chris, you wanted to piggyback.
Well, just to kind of reemphasize something that, or point something out, I think, related to what Amanda said, is how vulnerable the senior population is. We are living longer now than we have in the past. And we have a lot. I think we're just beginning to realize the depth of the problem. A lot of very lonely, very depressed seniors. They are not only by themselves, oftentimes in desperate need of social interaction. They're very susceptible to even what seems to be the silliest, most obviously ill-intentioned people. I sometimes see that with the clients that I work for, or the people that I go see sometimes through court-appointed work, how eager they are to welcome anyone into conversation or into their home and talk to them. So they're uniquely vulnerable to that in ways that don't make sense logically, but if you dig underneath the surface, you can see that. The other thing that I will say, you made a great point that these older individuals, they can't go back to work. They can't replace the money that's lost. And oftentimes, even if the sad part is when the money's gone, it's gone. So $4 million to two brothers who've already spent it all on a house at the beach and a Corvette and a trip around the world, we can, you know, catch them red-handed and put them in jail. But that $4 million is not going to materialize back in her bank account. And that's true, you know, with so many people that we talk to, it's usually not that much. Maybe it's like $10,000 that a son or a daughter took, but it's gone now. And
Absolutely. You hope that they bought a car or house with it, because then you can sell those items and get them back. But usually, like you said, it's the vacations. It's stuff that's harder to track and do that. And then that money's gone. The point you made about isolation is so important, because with this population, as their friends, as their family pass away, they become so desperate for any kind of contact. And those scams that you hear about, the telemarketing kind of scams and the sweetheart scams and the ones that you go, how does anyone ever fall for that? It's because someone's talking to me. They get their trust. They usually don't start right away with the scam. They just start talking to them and become their friend and then start doing that. And I encourage anyone who's listening, if you have older adults from your church or from your family or others, make sure you're checking in with them. Call them. You know, if your family doesn't live nearby, make sure you're picking up the phone and checking in on them. It's so important. It might not seem like a lot, but a call a week is going to be huge to that person and could be what keeps them from becoming a victim of abuse. Because that isolation is one of those huge risk factors for all types. Because, like you said, they're just so eager for contact that they'll let anybody into their lives.
Yeah, the one thing you mentioned is that in some areas, individuals can lack capacity in one area, but not in another. And Chris, you shared a case last week with a group of us regarding that particular issue. In about a minute and a half, can you share that case?
Okay. I will try to. This will kind of incorporate, if we have time to go into it, a lot of the concepts that we've talked about today. But we'll talk about a hypothetical guy, let's call him Joe, in his mid to late 70s. He had moved to somewhere south of Atlanta. I think it was probably Noonan or an area like that, probably 10 years ago. Retired from somewhere up north and moved down here with his wife. They moved into a golf course community. They didn't really know anybody. Two adult sons were spread across the country. And shortly thereafter, his wife was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And so she was physically healthy, but she was, you know, cognitively not a partner for him. And he was her full-time caregiver. The neighborhood that they moved into, the development basically, you know, lost value. There was no value left in development. The property went downhill. And, you know, to the point that we've been talking about, he was isolated down here. He didn't know anyone. He felt like that he just didn't have anyone to talk to, or things were just going so poorly for him. He was very vulnerable to this type of scam. And these people are sophisticated purveyors of this type of scam as well. Once they identify you as vulnerable to this type of scam, you're in their web, so to speak, and they will alter their scam, alter their interactions with you in any way possible to continue the money coming to them. It started as either you've won a house or you've won a car. We need shipping costs or taxes or something like that. Just, you know, get him on the phone, make him think he's won something. And these people, they would call him every day. Some of them would meet him from time to time at places. They got to know him, and he felt socially interact with them and have a real relationship with him. This over time was hundreds and thousands of dollars to these people. So when Sun became curious about this and started to notice this, this is a typical interaction. Sun calls dad, what's going on with these people? Or I think he was at his dad's house and the phone rang and his dad kind of shuffles around the corner and starts out by saying, okay, yeah, I have these people that I'm friends with. They need some money. You know, maybe we'll talk about it another time. The next time it was, well, you know, I really don't want to talk about it. And then the third time is, mind your own business. And then they don't talk after that. And dad's on his own by himself. So son has power of attorney, but what did we talk about? If dad wants to continue to participate in this scam or continue to use his money like this, you know, the son is really powerless to stop him with the power of attorney. So the son's only option at that point is to try and file for conservatorship, which is a tricky case because conservatorship requires a high showing to the court that this person lacks capacity to manage their own money. Objectively, in every other aspect of this man's life, he was competent. He cared for his wife. He paid his bills. He could converse easily, but it was just this one aspect of his life that he could not manage. And he was, as their generation is, he could not believe, he could not comprehend that someone would go to this length to make this up. He felt that anybody that would call him every day or, you know, it just had to be real because there was such depth to what he was being told. But so the issue then is with a conservatorship, and there was a case that came out in Cobb County that went to the Georgia Supreme Court as well. Does he understand what he's doing? Clearly, this is dumb, objectively a bad thing, and it's costing him money. Does he understand what he's doing or why is he doing it? And the Georgia Supreme Court case said they held that a woman in a similar situation was in need of a conservator because she didn't understand what she was doing. They said in dicta, which is kind of throwaway language in the decision, that had she said that she was doing it because it was fun and she didn't care whether she won or lost or whether the money went away, then that would have been a legitimate reason for her to do it as entertainment. I have no idea why the Georgia Supreme Court put that in there. It was bad language. But anyway, so the question and when this man gets on the stand and his attorney asks him, why are you doing this? Does he say, I'm doing it because I'm bored and it's entertaining. It helps me pass the day. In which case, he doesn't need a conservator. He's just a really bad decision maker. Or does he say, I think this is a legitimate investment of my money. And I think at some point in the near future, I'm going to get money back from these people, in which case he does need a conservator because he can't evaluate the reality of his financial situation. And this guy said when he was on the stand, this is a legitimate investment of my money, and I believe I'm going to be more than repaid for everything that I've lost. So that shows you a little bit of the nuance involved, even when the situation might appear on the surface as a straightforward just scam that this guy's, you know, is in need of a guardian and conservator.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, that's, we can really tell that older adults are such a vulnerable population. Real quick, Amanda, how can individuals get in contact with you?
Well, if you suspect any sort of abuse, neglect, or exploitation, physical, financial, whatever, the best thing to do first is to call law enforcement because it is a crime in Georgia. If it's an emergency right then, obviously call 911. If not, you can call the non-emergency number. If it's in the community, you're going to call Adult Protective Services at 866-552-4464, or you can report online at www.aging.ga.gov, and there's a lot more resources on there to learn more about abuse. If somebody is in a facility like a nursing home or an assisted living, you're going to call Healthcare Facility Regulation at 1-800-878-6442.
Chris, how can individuals get in contact with you?
My name's Chris Brannon. Our firm is Brannon Black, LLC, on the web at www.georgia-elderlaw.com and phone number 770-854-0688.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Amanda. If you would like to check out more information about the show, you can go to caringforagingparents.info.
Right. And thank you, Jenny, for putting together a great show. Just also want to remind our listeners, too, that we are currently looking for sponsors and supporters and also looking for other guests. So if you have anyone who is interested in being a sponsor, please email Jenny directly at jenny@caringforagingparents.info. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. On behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network and on behalf of Jenny Hewer and all of our guests in the studio today, I'm Ryan McPherson. We will see you again real soon on the radio.